The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. Yes, it can seem rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, and it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of your inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. Here on the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Are you ready to step into your vibration of change? Welcome. You might be listening live here on 1150 AM KKNW in the Seattle area. You might be watching live on my Facebook page, and my cat Indy has just decided to join us. She's welcoming you too. You might be on transformationtalkradio.com, or you might be listening after the fact on one of the dozens of podcasts that ends up on or on my YouTube channel. But wherever and whenever you're joining us from today, we're grateful to have you here, and you're going to have fun today because we've got a wonderful guest. He's been on before, and he's got some interesting things to say. But before I share who he is and introduce him, I want to say hello to the people behind the technology. Benny Mathers at KKNW. Good morning, Benny.
Hi, Christine. Yes, you're in the wild, wild, you know, kingdom there still. Didn't want to be late for the show.
No. And, you know, it's three cats. It does make it a little crazy. But as long as we don't have cat fights, I'm good.
I don't know. You want to shake up the show? I mean, we've already got an amazing guest. That's going to shake it up enough for everybody.
Let's skip that. Let's skip that.
All right. Good idea.
And hello. Is that Jessica or is that Jacob over there at TTR?
Surprise. It's Jessica today.
Oh, great. Hello, Jessica. Thank you for doing what you do. And I'm really excited about our guest today because he's been on before. Okay, Indy. Thank you. I know you're excited too. You want to be a part of this. Cats are very intuitive, and our guest today is really tuned in. We're having Mark Anthony join us again. He's known as a psychic explorer, and he's got a really interesting curriculum vitae, shall we say. His resume includes being an attorney and being a psychic medium who interacts with the spiritual realm. He's an author. He's been on, you know, major things like The Doctors, Gaia TV's Beyond Belief with George Noory. And he's been featured at conferences, including at universities. I love the way he's got that rationalist part of his brain and the intuitive, and he knows how to connect it. And he's got a new book out that I'm really excited about. It's called The Afterlife Frequency. And, you know, here on the show, we talk about the vibration of change. Vibration has to do with frequency. Change relates to frequency. Healing relates to frequency. And as we're going to learn, connecting with the spiritual realm relates to frequency too. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Mark Anthony. Hi, Mark.
Thank you, Christine, for having me on the show. It's great to be back. And to all the KKNW and Transformation Talk Network crew and audience, thank you for tuning in.
You know, it's funny because my cat has decided to be in the midst of it. And I really do feel like animals are very connected. And so, you know, my cat Indy has decided that she wants to connect with you because you're connected. And first of all, I want to congratulate you on all your success, including, you know, you've got a show as well, and you get to appear on all sorts of shows, many of them much bigger than my modest show. But I'm just kind of curious about why you went to that next level and wrote this next book about frequency.
You know, growing up with these abilities and having parents that were psychic mediums, you know, my dad was a Navy SEAL and a NASA engineer. And I remember him talking to me when I was about 8, and we were talking about space, because I was always interested in what he did with the space program. And he told me that a mystery is just a question for which we do not yet have the answer. And that really stuck with me. So I've always wanted to know, when it comes to spirit communication, the afterlife, near-death experiences, shared death experiences, deathbed visions, how does this happen? Why does this happen? And where does this happen? And that started the ball rolling. And if you'll indulge me just for a little bit, years ago, the best friend that I ever had, Billy, we met when we were 11 years old, went to junior high, high school, college. After high school, after college, I went to law school. Then he went to Asia and he learned to speak Japanese, Cantonese, Thai, and Indonesian. And so he was teaching executives in Japan how to speak English, conversational English. And I went to Asia. I took about a month and a half off, much to the chagrin of my law firm and my law partners. Okay. And so we traveled throughout Asia. And since the time we were in high school, Billy and I had this ongoing debate. He was an atheist, and I obviously am not. And he'd always say, "I don't understand how you do the psychic thing." He goes, the communicating with spirits. And because like every Buddhist temple that we were at in Asia, I wanted to talk to the monks and we'd get into these discussions. And he said, "You know, Mark, there's no technology, there's no science that can prove this. So I'm still skeptical about it." Well, one of the great honors of my life, Christine, is when he and his fiance asked me to perform their wedding ceremony because I was a notary. And it's like, and I'll never forget that. I'm standing there and there's Billy and Yuki. She was from Japan. They're standing in front of me. And everybody that mattered to me was there. My parents, his parents, all of our friends from college and in high school. It was just amazing. It was one of those shining moments that, you know, when it's happening, you know, it's good. But when you look back on it, you realize it was great, beyond great. Well, unfortunately, 2 years after that, he succumbed to suicide. And there's a lot of reasons. And, you know, I want to, you know, respect his privacy. And needless to say, I was devastated. And about a year after that, my first book was released, Never Letting Go. And I was on a nationwide book tour, which included an event at a paranormal conference at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. And it's a beautiful, beautiful hotel. So it's like the old West Colorado elegance, you know. And I had just given my presentation. And so then I'm down in the conference room. And it's a big conference hall, rather, big conference hall. And there was a lot of guys and women there from TV, a lot of the paranormal investigators, and everybody at a table. So I'm signing books. And my manager, Rocky, was with me. And then she decided to walk around and check out some of the other displays. And so she's walking by this table that has all this paranormal investigation equipment. And there's a guy named Chris. He's manning this one table and she's walking by it. And out of this machine, it's called a spirit box. And what a spirit box does is it scans EM frequencies, electromagnetic frequencies, with the objective of tuning into spirits. She's walking by it and she hears, "Get Mark." And she stops and she looks at this thing. And Chris said, "Did that just say," and before they could react, it says, "Get Mark." And so I hear them screaming, "Mark, get over here, get over here." And I'm looking and I'm like, "What are they?" You know, so I get up and I go over and this crowd's forming there. And as I walked up and before I could say anything, out of the spirit box comes, "Dude." And I knew the voice. And Rocky looked at me, tears were in her eyes. She goes, "Mark, that's Billy's voice." And then I hear, "Love you, bro," come out of it, and static fills it, and tears are just streaming down my eyes. I'm like, "Oh my God." And the investigator's like, "Whoa." He goes, "This is really unusual. Not only did it say get Mark, but both of you recognized the voice." And the thing is, Billy and I grew up in Florida on the East Coast in the surfing culture. He always called me dude or bro. In fact, one of the last things I remember him saying to me, I was at the Bangkok International Airport and I was saying goodbye to him because I was going back to the States. He was going to Singapore and he hugged me and he goes, "Love you, bro." And you know, Christine, it got me thinking. And this is what in my new book, The Afterlife Frequency, I talk about spiritual synchronicity. This was more than just him reaching out. And it began to dawn on me that this was a complex series of events, which was engineered, if you will, by a spirit. and not just a spirit, but one that when he was here was an atheist, and one who told me he didn't believe this because there's no technology that can do this. And then what does he do? He comes through to me through this technology.
And I love it.
Yeah. And so that got me on the road, which led to me writing my new book, The Afterlife Frequency. And and for the benefit of the listeners, that story is not in the book, okay? Because I'm not going to sit here and tell you the stories in the book, because here's why. I take scientific concepts and I explain them in a way that anybody can understand. Because, I mean, who wants to read an algebra or a calculus textbook? Okay, that's just going to be...
Hey, I'm a former math major, you know, so...
Okay, well, you're the exception. But still, it's hard, okay? For people who don't have that level of expertise, it's going to be difficult. But then I illustrate it with stories. And the reason that I didn't put the story in about Billy is because people would be asking me, well, what caused you to write this book? Mm-hmm. And there it is.
Yeah. That's such an amazing story. And I think we live at this this transitional time where science and the more esoteric, the spiritual, you know, and I hate the fact that we separate these things out. Yeah. I personally have issues with the term spirituality or being spiritual in some sense, because it compartmentalizes our reality, when in fact we should be embracing all of it as different vibrations, so to speak. But you know, for the we need to talk about that in those terms, because it does help to identify the higher frequency vibration that we want to talk about. So I think that it's really interesting that there are ways in which scientists are able to measure. And clearly you had this situation with this machine. Yeah. Are there other ways in which scientists are identifying that there does exist this other spiritual realm, and we can indeed talk with our loved ones who've passed over?
Well, that's a long story, but I'll give you the condensed version of it. It started with Thomas Edison back in the 1920s. And he was interviewed by several different magazines prior to his passing. And he said, I'm working on a device sensitive enough to tune into discarnate intelligence, meaning spirits. So that got nicknamed by the media the spirit phone. Well, then, you know, Edison passed, he died, and he wasn't able to complete his work. And so since that time, there have been a number of devices, which like the spirit box, and there's EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, there's infrared scanners, there's ultraviolet scanners that are used in paranormal investigation, aka ghost hunting. I prefer the term paranormal investigation. And they scan the electromagnetic frequency looking for anomalies and to pick up on voices. And the scientist who wrote the foreword for my book, Dr. Gary Schwartz, who's the head of psychology, parapsychology, physics, surgery at the University of Arizona.
Yeah, whom I know personally, by the way.
Yeah,
I did some part of his research, yes.
Okay, yeah, me too. And he's just awesome. And he is currently working on the soul phone. And the soul phone technology is designed to tune in to the other side. Now, I'm on the board of directors of the soul phone project. And
great.
I'm not at liberty to disclose what I have seen in his laboratory, but all I can say is OMG, okay? And I think that within a few years, maybe even sooner, there very well may be devices which we can tune into the other side. But until then, the technology already exists, and it's us. We are the biotechnology for spirit communication.
I love that. That is so exciting. Yeah. Gary Schwartz is amazing. University of Arizona. And, you know, he's written several books sort of in this paranormal exploration, including the GOD experiments, which was an interesting book. And that's so exciting that there may be a device or an approach that utilizes our device, because we are amazing creations.
Sure. Well, you know, people say, well, oh, this is pseudoscience. You can't do this, blah, blah, blah. All right. Let's go back to 1920. Try to explain to somebody a microwave oven. All right. This small box that you put in a glass of water or, you know, something, and you press a button in, voila, the water's boiling in a minute, or the food's heated up, or you're cooking things, yet it doesn't project ambient heat.
Yes.
Right. That would be, and explaining that, well, you're actually using a form of electromagnetic radiation, which are microwaves, which are rapidly stimulating the water molecules of what's inside. And by them decomposing, it produces heat, thereby, therefore, it cooks. People mm-hmm. would look at you like you had four heads. Okay. Right. They'd be like, that's impossible. So,
not to mention what we're doing right now, that is where we're connecting at a distance, having this conversation, and it's being aired via the internet in many different locations.
Worldwide. Yeah. I mean, you and I are talking into computers, which are taking our sound wave energy, converting it into electrical energy, then transmitting it through miles of wires, taking it to an antenna, converting the electrical energy into radio wave energy, which bounces off a series of satellites. Then the radio wave energy is transmitted to a collection point, radio wave being converted back into electrical energy going through miles of wires, and then converted back into sound wave energies, which then hits somebody's eardrum. Sound wave then turns into mechanical energy, which triggers the stapes bone in the middle ear to strike the eighth cranial nerve, taking that mechanical energy, turning it into an electrical impulse that goes into your brain and says, welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show. Mm-hmm. Now, all of this happens at the speed of light, because all forms of electromagnetic energy, which are radio waves, microwaves, light, ultraviolet, and that's 186,282 miles per second. And once again, if you try to explain that to somebody, you know, less than a century ago, that was merely science fiction, or best case scenario, pseudoscience.
Right.
Yet for us, it's a reality. You know, so just because we may not currently have a piece of technology outside of the human body that communicates with spirits or you know, a more sophisticated kind than like the spirit box and these other forms, doesn't mean it isn't going to happen, because science isn't static.
So I know that in your book, you offer step-by-step approach. So before people can get a hold of one of these spirit phones, what advice do you have for us to be connecting with the other realm?
Well, I always believe in prayer and meditation. Prayer is when you talk to the divine, to the energy. Meditation is when you listen. Also, meditation is very important for calming the mind. Think of your consciousness as a blackboard, and every thought, impulse, and all this is something you write on the blackboard. These days, a whiteboard with and you got to erase all of that so you can get to one thought. But we are all receiving messages from spirits all the time. The question is, are we aware of this? And this is one of the lessons in the afterlife frequency, is what I call spiritual situational awareness. You know, when you're raised by a Navy SEAL, okay, be aware. That was Dad's mantra. Be aware. You know, you go outside, be aware. Before you go in the ocean, be aware. And so he really hammered that into me. And situational awareness is used not just by the military, but by police and other first responders. And it's when whatever situation you're in, pay attention to what's going on all around you. Okay. Especially these days. These days, so many awful things are happening. And I, you know, don't necessarily want to get into that. Mm-hmm. But let's expand this into not just the physical, but being open to messages from spirits. And I was trying to figure out, how do I explain this? And I was working on the book, and I just kept hitting a brick wall, because not everyone's a psychic or a medium, but everyone's capable of a psychic or mediumistic experience. So I hit writer's block, and Christine, I just couldn't get through it. I mean, it was just, you're a writer, you understand. There's times it just flows, and then there's times it just doesn't. So I decided to go for a walk on the beach to clear my head. And I'm leaving my driveway, and so I get these cold chills and tingles. So I said, okay, that's the spirit. And I do this about face and head in the opposite direction to this bike path. So I'm walking down this bike path, and suddenly I see these two objects shining in the sun. And I walk up to them, and it's a nickel and a penny. And I reach over, and I'm going to go pick it up. And I hear my mom's voice. Both my parents are in spirit, and I hear mom's voice. If they're not heads up, don't touch it. It's bad luck. And I started laughing because my mom's family is of Italian descent, and they have a superstition for all occasions. And, you know, coins being, you know, tails up is one of those. And then I hear dad's voice. It's money. Grab it. And I'm laughing. Okay.
They're just agreeing in the spiritual realm. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm holding this nickel and this penny in the palm of my hand. I go, oh, 6 cents. And I'll say, oh, wait a second. 6 cents. And then the chills and tingles are intensifying. And I knew they were trying to tell me something. And then I saw in my mind's eye the image of my father standing in the ocean holding this blue canvas raft that he used to have. I'm like, okay, he was a Navy SEAL, a scuba diver, a swimming instructor. What is he? And then it hit me. Recognize, accept, feel, trust. And I go, oh my God, that's what they're trying to tell me. And so I ran back to the house, and the words just flew out of my hands. And they helped me or guided me, helped me to develop a four-step process to help people recognize the presence of spirits, accept that contact is real, feel it without overthinking it, and then trust in the truth and veracity of the message. And that's the raft technique, you know. And it was like, wow. And the raft technique was an example of raft, you know, because I got guided there. I recognized the sign. I accepted they're trying to tell me something. I felt the message, and then I trusted it. And I want to say something about trusting messages from spirits. A lot of people these days, there's all this conspiracy theory craziness going around on the internet. And there's so-called shamans that say, oh, I'm receiving messages to start an insurrection, or, you know, people in different religions think that you should blow things up in the name of, you know, their version of God. Those have nothing to do with spirituality. Those are merely the ego of a narcissistic sociopath. An ego is edging God out, because true messages from spirits, from the divine, are never about anger, bigotry, hatred, or violence. That's an extension of the human ego. True messages from the divine are about love, healing, peace, and resolution. And that's how you know the difference. And that's how you know when to trust the message.
And one of the things I've found, Mark, too, is when I'm getting guidance about something, even if it's guidance to avoid doing something, or, you know, guidance about something that I should, I guess in the 3D realm, you think be fearful about, it's just so neutral. It's absolutely neutral. Not like there's good or bad, or, you know, like, it's just kind of like, there it is. And it's for me to sort of process and interpret, as opposed to this, you know, big emotional kind of download.
I think that's part of it. It can be an emotional download if it's a message of love. Let's say that with the raft technique, that, you know, you're grieving a loved one, and that you're not necessarily a psychic or medium, but all of a sudden you feel compelled to turn on the radio in your car when you're driving, and then you hear that song that makes you think of that person, and it touches your heartstrings. Okay. Yeah. There's the raft technique again. You recognize that a spirit was prompting you to do this. You accepted it as real. You're feeling it. And then you're trusting that it's a message of love. Now, where people go wrong is in the third step, the feeling. Well, maybe that was just coincidence. Let me start cross-examining it away and picking at it. You know, and that's what I explain. And I show people how to overcome that in the book, The Afterlife Frequency.
It's funny because years ago, somebody who'd served as a publicist for me, he died suddenly of a heart attack at age 59. The last thing he posted on Facebook was, you can't always get what you want. You know, and then, you know, identified as the quote from the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
So I was driving down to his memorial service from the Seattle area down to Portland. And I heard that song on the radio twice. And I knew that it's kind of like, yeah, yeah, I hear you, Ira. I hear you. Yeah, there he is. And you're still fine.
Perfect. See, yeah. Christine, you naturally, because you're you, okay, you naturally employed Raft. Because people like you that are well-versed and connected with the spirituality, you do that naturally. And the reason that this four-step process was delivered to me is to help people that don't have that background and that experience. Because the thing is, God talks to us all the time. Spirits communicate with us all the time. This isn't some isolated thing. God didn't stop talking to us 2,000 years ago and close it, only this book, or this other book. Or this book, right. Okay. There's a constant contact with the afterlife frequency, the higher vibration, and everybody can and should benefit from it.
So, Mark, one of my questions for you is this process of discerning, not just about whether something or someone is from the other side giving us a message, but are there times when it's not in our best interest to listen to that being on the other side?
Never. Because once again, true messages from the divine, true messages from spirit are about love, healing, and resolution. Mm-hmm. And they're uplifting. If you start thinking as spirit's telling you to be angry, to be violent, to be vengeful, to do something harmful, then that isn't a message from a spirit. That is coming from your own ego, which is edging God out. You know, there's a difference between the brain and our mind or our soul. The brain is essentially a hard drive that hosts the electromagnetic soul, which is a term that I introduce in the afterlife frequency to describe what we really are. Is pure consciousness, which is electromagnetic energy, and henceforth the electromagnetic soul. And in the explanation of what this is and how I developed this, you know, I go into much greater detail in the book. But the thing is, think of your brain like a computer hard drive. And when the hard drive crashes, meaning when we die, the programs, the who and what we are on that hard drive, do not disintegrate. They get uploaded, transferred, if you will, to a higher vibrational frequency, which is the afterlife frequency.
And you're talking about us being electromagnetic beings. That's been measured in various ways, correct?
It has. Albert Einstein was the first person to say this. He said, matter is energy. Energy is light is energy. Matter is energy. We're all light beings. We're all energetic beings. And we know that the brain has an electrical field. We know that the heart has an electrical field. We know that our nervous system operates on electrical impulses. Mm-hmm. And now scientists, the first discovery was in the 1920s. I think it was Alexander Maberov, it was Lebedev. And Alexander Maberov is a more recent Russian biophysicist. And this has been confirmed by other biophysicists, including at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, that on a cellular level, our cells, our individual cells, create flashes of light. Now, this is not something visible to the human eye. This is not bioluminescence like a firefly. And MIT put out a paper that said it appears that these flashes of light are for inter and intracellular communication. In other words, our body communicates with itself using light, which means it moves at light speed. And to me, this is very exciting. It also ties into what Albert Einstein was saying, how we are all light beings. And also, light is the only form of electromagnetic energy visible to the human eye. And all the great spiritual teachers from, you know, the sages of ancient India, through Buddha, through Moses, through Jesus, through Muhammad, through Gandhi, through, I mean, you can go all over the world, every religion, Native Americanism, all of them. How do they describe the divine? as light.
Yes.
People of near-death experiences talk about going into the light. And to me, it is so enlightening to realize that the same light, the way we perceive the spiritual energy of the divine, is the same light that is being created within us on a cellular level.
That's fascinating. And I think about the studies that have shown the magnetism as well regarding each cell, having this toroidal flow, and how we as human bodies have this toroidal flow, and the earth itself has this energetic magnetic flow that's in the pattern of a torus. So there's the magnetic part.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. You know, Elon Musk, he wants to go to Mars and all that. And hey, look, I'm a space guy. Okay. I'm all for it. And Mars doesn't have an a magnetic field.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that interesting? I was shocked when I read that. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm sure somebody would point out if I am, but I'm pretty certain based on everything I've read that we have a magnetic North Pole and a magnetic South Pole, mm-hmm. yet Mars doesn't. And out of all the planets that we can tell in our solar system, the one that's the most like Earth would be Mars. Mm-hmm. You know, it's roughly the same size. It sort of kind of has an atmosphere. It's funny. I saw, was it Sir David Attenborough, mm-hmm. the conservationist, the environmentalist, such a great guy. He goes, and he's so British. And he goes, why would you possibly want to go live on Mars? He goes, can you think of a better place to live than Earth? And he had a really good point. He goes, and that's why we really need to take care of this planet, because it's so fragile. Mm-hmm. I'm all for space travel and the technology, uh-huh. but we have been given a very fragile place to live. And it just so happens to have an electromagnetic field, an atmosphere, and the ability to repel harmful forms of EM radiation that would kill us.
Mm-hmm. Thinking in terms of the fragility of our planet and how we are undergoing what I believe is a huge transformation on our planet, has it shifted anything about the connection with the spiritual realm and the information and maybe even the amount of information coming from the other side?
I don't know if it's shifted. I think there is a greater awareness now of this. Now, people have been spiritually oriented since the dawn of recorded history. And that's why humans have created religions as a means of interpreting the interface. You know, religions are a means of an interface with this divine. And I think that there's a much greater understanding now. And of course, there's always going to be the skeptics and the naysayers and the people who don't believe this. And then the mm-hmm. religious extremists who say it's, you know, my way or the, you know, hell highway. Right. But I think that awareness is increasing. And I certainly hope that this is going to be positive because, you know, Christine, throughout my life, I had the benefit of meeting Neil Armstrong. I've met Buzz Aldrin, the first two humans to step foot on the moon. I met John Glenn. I met Mike Forman. And I actually met a politician, Bill Nelson, who was on one of the space shuttles and now is the head of NASA. And it was great because I was able to, you know, talk to them all briefly. John Glenn, I talked to for quite some time. Then that was something I'll always treasure. And they all said pretty much the same thing. When you're looking down from space at the Earth and you see how incredibly beautiful it is and how alive it is, and you can almost feel, they said like you can feel the pulse of the energy, and then you also see how fragile it is. Mm. Now it was just overwhelming to hear that.
So when you do sessions with people, what is your approach? Is it just raft, or
Well, raft is a technique to use not just for encountering or having a spiritual contact, whether it's in a dream or, you know, you feel somebody around. It's also how to help interpret contact through a medium. If you've had a near-death experience, it helps you to put it in order and understand it. Deathbed visions, when somebody is dying and that person starts talking about seeing their loved ones in spirit and people around them begin to see that as well. So it goes from a DBV, deathbed vision, to an SDE, a shared death experience. And this is much more common than is widely known and being much more documented now. The raft technique is the approach to helping understand all of that. What I do when I do readings for people, and if people are interested in scheduling a reading with me, please visit my website, which is afterlifefrequency.com, just like the book, The Afterlife Frequency. I spend about 10 minutes or so explaining my process so that they're aware of it. And then I open up my brain to higher frequencies, and I'll see things, hear things, feel things, know things. So what happens is spirits, which are pure electromagnetic energy, are sending an electromagnetic impulse to me, and that goes into my brain, which then converts it into recognizable concepts based on my memories, feelings, and cultural associations. So then I'll explain what's happening with me. And what I always tell people is my interpretation of something is more important than yours. Like the other night, I was doing a spirit communication event online through brightlive.com. And I was doing a ring for this woman, and it was her father. I think it was her father's spirit came through and kept saying, Pepsi, 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 Pepsi. And she said, well, I drink Diet Coke all the time. I go, no, that's not it. I keep hearing Pepsi, 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 Pepsi. And she said, wait a second. My son has a dog that he wanted to name Pepsi, but we wouldn't let him, so he named it Poppy. And I'm like, bingo.
Oh, I love it. So you talked about taking the frequency that is present and interpreting it through your brain. So what's your perspective on the brain's function with consciousness?
Well, the brain is the host of the consciousness, whereas the electromagnetic soul, our consciousness, is an eternal living being. And it appears, and I've done over 15,000 readings, which means I've connected with something like 100,000 plus spirits. Because in a reading, in a one-on-one reading particularly, you're going to get more than one person coming through. And
interesting.
Yeah. And look at it this way. Think of your body like, think of your body like a bottle. Okay. Uh-huh. And the brain is the cork in the bottle. And your spirit is this eternal being, but we are here in the material world to experience things on a finite level. That's why our brain is only capable of perceiving finite things and is incapable of truly grasping infinity. I mean, if you think about always was, always will be, forever going on into eternity, your brain really, and it's real frustrating when you try to do that, because it appears that we come into this incarnation to experience things that we can't when you're infinite. Spirits are pure energy. They don't get tired, old, sick, or die. All right, they move at the speed of light. They're patching this vast data network, which I call the collective consciousness. Yet we come into this incarnation to experience things that we can't there. And the brain is the arbiter between a finite material world possession and an infinite possession, perception, a finite perception to an infinite perception when we revert back to a purely energetic state. So why do we come into this world to experience suffering and loss? I mean, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to explain to the parents of a child who's passed that, oh, this is part of what you're supposed to experience here. And by saying that, I don't mean to be disrespectful or flippant at all. But everything has a reason why it happens. And there is a reason why we go through this finite incarnation. And the brain is the key to that.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned collective consciousness. And I think that from my perception, I'm going to be curious about your perspective too, but from my perception, we're getting more and more tied into the collective consciousness. Yes. And that some of us who are sensitive are being asked to help help process some things within the collective consciousness. As a psychic and medium, how do you decipher what's yours, what's just, you know, a specific message from the spiritual realm, and when you're tapping into this collective consciousness?
In collective consciousness communication is one of the chapters in the Afterlife Frequency. And I started using the term collective consciousness in my last book, Evidence of Eternity. But I expand upon it here. Think of your soul, your EMS, your electromagnetic soul, as a drop of water. And so when we die, that drop of water plunges into this eternal sea of souls, aka the collective consciousness. But you maintain your individuality. So your electromagnetic soul is connected to other EMSs, connected to other EMSs. So now you're part of this infinite database. And collective consciousness communication, it comes in many different ways. So I've been at several events or maybe, you know, online as well as in person. And all of a sudden I'll say, okay, I'm feeling a young male who died from blunt force trauma to the head. This indicates that he died by suicide. Like 6 or 7 hands go up, and I get a collective of spirits coming through, because what happens with collective consciousness communication is there's a commonality between the spirits and or a commonality between the recipients of the message. Mm-hmm. And then they'll pair on, like, I'll be drawn to one person and it narrows down. The spirit narrows it down to that person. Then we arc over to another one, and they may have died in different manners. Okay. Different forms of suicide, but the messages are all in, very relevant and specific to the intended recipients. Then.
And I just want to interject it. To me, that makes perfect sense, because if you talk about the frequency of suicide, that, even though the suicides may have been performed in a different way for different reasons, it must have some of the same similarity of that vibration.
Yeah, absolutely, Christine. It's very good. It does. And the people that are receiving the messages need to hear, first off, the collective consciousness message and then the individualized messages, which will bring forth facts and data to guarantee that, yes, this is, you know, my son, my brother, you know, whoever that it was. Then there may be, let's say I do a reading. Let's say I'm doing a reading on you, and you're in an audience of 100 people. And yes, the reading makes sense to you. But then 15 other people, it touches their heartstrings. I mean, like, more than just, oh, that was nice. It really resonates with them. That's another form of collective consciousness communication. Spirits know my finite human brain can't handle this tremendous amount of information. So they send a main message, and then encrypted on that are several other messages, which then resonate with multiple recipients. People say, well, that sounds like hocus pocus. Yeah, well, look at what the military does. The Pentagon sends a message to Camp Pendleton, yet piggybacked on top of that message are several encrypted and encoded messages. So if human technology does this, spirits do this as well. And so anyway, I'm just scratching the surface of the discussion on collective consciousness communication. Also, there is a vast wisdom where they can bring through medical information, healing information. Edgar Cayce, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know who he was, but for those who don't, he was a very famous medium who died back in the 1940s. And there's the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment, and there are several branches all over the country, the main one being in Virginia Beach in Virginia.
And people may recognize it just the abbreviation ARE.
Yeah, the ARE. Yeah, you know, in our field, Christina, there's so many acronyms. We got the ARE, we got the EMS, we got the INDS, ION. You know, but the thing is, he referred to what I call the collective consciousness as the universal mind. And I've researched Casey enough, and I was like, oh, because I came up with the term. And I was reading him, and we're talking about the same thing. That's where he got his medical cures. Healing is a gift from the divine, mm-hmm. and it's really fascinating. When I'm doing a reading for somebody and this very complex medical information comes through. Now, I have a basic understanding of anatomy and physiology because I work as an attorney and I also did personal injury cases. But when spirits start transmitting information to me about genetic anomalies that I know nothing about, and then the recipient's like, oh my God, that runs in our family. Or they contact me like a month or two later and say, you know, we weren't sure. And then we went to the doctor and we tested positive for this. We know that that is what's coming from the collective consciousness, because healing is a gift from the divine.
Mm-hmm. I just want to circle back for a minute. When you were talking about doing presentations, doing readings in front of a group, and how it will resonate with, you know, more than one person, even if the message is from one spirit that's connected to that one person. That also makes sense to me based on what you're saying in your book and what you're saying in this discussion, that it's all about frequency. Right. Because one of the things I've noticed when I do an Akashic Record reading, that it's not just about the information that is transferred that makes the change. There's this vibrational awareness and this vibrational shift based on that kind of that resonance, that interaction of frequency, that allows a person to understand something more deeply, to move through something more profoundly. And so I think that's really cool that whether these gatherings are on Zoom or in person, that it has that effect. So it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and by tapping into the Akashic records, you're interfacing with the collective consciousness. Yeah. You know, I mean, we put different terms on it, but we're talking the same thing. And sure. I think it's fascinating because, you know, there's this vast amount of wisdom. And if you look at it, you know, the great healers, you know, Jesus, you know, the saints and saints are not just limited to Christianity. The Hindus and the Buddhists also have people that they venerate as saints, and healing tends to be a component of the work of these people. So, mm-hmm. So that's why I always say that true messages from the divine power that we call God, true messages from the afterlife frequency are about love, healing, and peace and resolution.
So I think about those on the other side who are helping us to transform, to heal, to evolve. So when you've interacted with those from the other side, are they saying that they have a role, they have a purpose, just like when we're in human form, we may feel like we're on a mission or serve some purpose for growth?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They do. And, you know, because I was wondering, like, what do you guys do? You know, what do you do? And, you know, you get the answer. You can't even begin to understand. I'm like, oh, come on. You got it. Come on. Try me, you know. And really, we can't really begin to understand. But the thing is, everybody, both on this side and the other side, has a part to play. And when you're a spirit, you're able to act in an advisory, a guidance, a healing capacity. But the thing is, spirits aren't here to control us. Okay. They're not here to tell us what to do. They can guide us. Ultimately, what we do with our lives is our decision, because free will is a gift. And what we do with that free will, now that seems to tie into why are we here in this incarnation. You know, one of I think the worst thing that all of us deal with is the death of a loved one. It's crushing. It pulls the rug right up from under you, and there's nothing we can do about it. Right. But what we can do is adjust how we react to it. And, you know, as an attorney and as a medium, I've seen a lot of people their lives ruined by grief, they turn to self-medicating, drugs, alcohol, impulsive behaviors, violence, and their grief leads them to inflict criminal type behaviors, which then inflict grief on someone else. Take someone who is behind the wheel, drunk, drunk driving, and they kill somebody. Did that person mean that day to get super drunk and go kill somebody? Probably not. But why does that person drink to that form of excess? Many times I've found in my work as a medium and as an attorney, when we examine that, they're coping with grief, maybe from childhood, unresolved grief or something else. So their grief led to crime, which leads to grief. And that's why it's so important to realize that you do have control over how you respond to things. And I've seen so many people, like organizations like Helping Parents Heal. All right, people absolutely crushed, understandably, totally understandably so, by the death of a child. But what they do is it now leads them on a spiritual path of understanding, to be more compassionate, to reach out and act as a support group for other parents who've lost children. And so instead of becoming drug addicts and alcoholics, they are shifting that into, by helping others, they're actually also helping themselves.
I can't think of anything worse than losing a child. And I'm sure you've interacted with
plenty
of people who have lost a child.
They're, according to grief experts, there is no pain greater than the loss of a child. Because when you lose a child, it upsets the natural order of things. We're supposed to die first, not our child. And you lose your future. It's just crushing. So, you know, my heart goes out. That's one of the reasons that I work with Helping Parents Heal, that I do spirit communication events with them, because that's how I can help.
Oh, Mark, there's so many more things I want to ask you. And again, I want to mention your book, The Afterlife Frequency, because you're such a great communicator. You've had so many interesting experiences to not only, like, it's not just the science of this, this is how we've got evidence that this really is true, but the examples, the stories touch people on a deep level to open them up to hope. Not only hope that there is this other side and that they will see their loved ones again, but that there's this possibility of communicating with their loved ones, communicating and being open to a new stage of interacting with their loved ones. In maybe 2 minutes or less, do you have a final message for our listeners and viewers?
I do. The message that has been conveyed to me is that my role is to help people understand that the divine power we call God exists, that the afterlife, heaven, the other side, nirvana, whatever you want to call it, exists, that our electromagnetic soul is an eternal living being, that we can communicate with electromagnetic souls, and that we will be reunited with our loved ones in the light when it is our appointed time to leave this material world.
So, given what you do, do you feel like you are helping to alleviate people's fear of death?
I think that's extremely important, because the fear of death is that somebody that we loved so much disintegrated into nothingness. And I can tell you without any doubt or hesitation, that is absolutely not true.
Yeah. This is fascinating. Again, share with our listeners and viewers how they can connect with you.
Please visit my website, afterlifefrequency.com. Please sign up for my newsletter. You can find out about scheduling a reading with me. And also, you can order my book, The Afterlife Frequency. There's also a grief management section. It's a free resource for people who are coping with loss. And all of that you can find at afterlifefrequency.com.
That's great. Thank you, Mark. It's been great to get to see you and talk to you again. And congratulations on your new book, which I think is officially coming out on the 12th. Is that right? Or we're past it?
It is. It's officially coming out on the 12th. But the reports I've been getting from Amazon, it's already hit number one on a couple different of their bestseller lists. So all I can say to everybody is thank you. I'm very humbled. I'm very honored. And Christine, thank you so much for having me on your show. And I want to thank all the KKNW listeners and all the Transformation Network listeners. Thank you and God bless you.
Yeah. And thank you, Mark. And thank you, listeners and viewers. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to empower yourself to step further into your vibration of change, please visit my website at christineupchurch.com, where you can learn more about my insights, upcoming events, and private sessions.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.